Hey everyone, it's Bobby Sylvester and this is the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. We're going to talk injuries, waiver wire, and answer questions from the listener mailbag today with guest Al Melchior from Fantasy Radio and FanRagSports.com. Al, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, Bobby. Thank you so much for having me on.
So, Al, we heard that Noah Syndergaard is going to start throwing batting practice soon. Everybody's been waiting so long with him. I've even had some people who just said, I give up, I drop Noah Syndergaard. And now it's looking like they should have held on to him because there's so many people getting hurt. Do you think Syndergaard's going to be the same when he comes back?
Oh, gosh. It really is just a wild card. I wish I could say I know. I really don't, because we've seen these situations where it's gone both ways. So, I was among those advising people in some situations where they had a real roster crunch to go ahead and drop him, because not only was there the prospect of him not giving significant innings this season, but maybe pitching out of the bullpen. And as far as I know, that's still in play. Although, like you said, the Mets, they really have a need for starting pitching. So, that was hopefully not a decision that people are gonna regret.
Yeah, with all these injuries that have been happening, like if you've got five guys in your DL and you're waiting for Syndergaard and don't know if he's even going to come back this season, let alone pitch in the rotation when he does, I think you had to drop him. Hopefully, you're in a situation where you've already got the playoffs locked up and you're in your head-to-head league and you're able to keep Syndergaard going, because when he comes back, I mean, he is Noah Syndergaard. I understand Madison Bumgarner wasn't the same when he came back, but there's a pretty good chance he's going to be very good, better than anyone you can pick up on the waiver wire.
Should help you with strikeouts if he's anywhere close to what he was before the injury.
So I want to talk about some of these injuries, Al, and what we do during the season when these injuries happen. I mean, here we are. We've got a month left. Fantasy playoffs are coming up, and some people are trying to squeeze their way into the playoffs, and they can't do it with dead weight on their roster. So we've got Alex Wood, Miguel Sano, Max Scherzer, Yu Darvish, Danny Salazar, Andrew Miller, and Cody Bellinger now too, all headed to the DL in the past week. So what do we do with these guys? Are any of them worthy of being dropped right now?
Actually, somebody asked me about Miller just a few hours ago, and I gave them sort of a blanket a sort of caveat, there are situations where it might make sense to drop Miller, because it was a situation where they needed to make room for a hitter. So it's these are all tough dilemmas. So you have to weigh who's out there. In the case of Andrew Miller, I said, depends on if it's a shallow league, you might be able to find a reliever, maybe not going to give you saves, but again, Miller's
Michael
probably
Givens,
not going to
something
gonna
like
do
that.
Anyways. But exactly, a Michael Givens that's going to give you great ratios. Those guys are out there. So probably Miller, more than anybody on this list, I would think is droppable. And I would say after that, maybe Danny Salazar, because he looked great when he was healthy.
He was so good, yeah.
But he's had a lot of health issues over the years. And again, if somebody's thinking about dropping one of these players, then I'd like to think in most cases it's because they really need to fill a need pretty desperately, either to get in the playoffs or advance in the playoffs. And so desperate times make for desperate measures. But it's very circumstantial. I wouldn't be eager to drop any of them.
Yeah, I've had so many of these questions over the past week. And again, it just depends on your league settings. It depends on how many guys you have on the DL, how deep your waiver wire is, everything like that. Scherzer and Darvish are almost certainly going to be back in 10 days. So no way you drop them. Sano is going to come back. Don't know how soon. Bellinger, I heard him talking about his injury. He said he just, kind of rolled his ankle a little bit. He feels fine. He could play on it no problem. Didn't think he was going to go to the DL. But with the Dodgers, they've got the playoffs wrapped up, so they're just going to shut him down for 10 days, let him get completely healthy. He'll be back really soon, so don't drop him. Wood is interesting to me, because they've got Yu Darvish going now. They don't need to rush him back. I'd probably keep him in almost every league, but you're right. Salazar and Miller are the guys to me. Miller, I'm almost definitely dropping. There's so many guys out there. Who knows if he's going to come back? And then Salazar, he's so up and down. I mean, maybe he comes back and he's horrible and just kills you again, but he was one of the top five pitchers in baseball there for about a month.
Yeah, that's what makes it a tough decision. We knew that upside was there. I think, frankly, I think I probably gave up on it at some point. But, we've seen it before from him. So it's a tough decision.
Yeah. So Tim Beckham was traded to the Orioles. They picked him up, and there was really not much noise about this trade because Tim Beckham's just kind of been a mediocre player. I'll tell you what, since they made the move, Tim Beckham has been one of the hottest hitters in baseball. He's hitting for power. He's got a bunch of homers this year. He's batting almost 300. Al, what do you make of Tim Beckham? Is this a legitimate breakout, or is he just hot lately and feasting on the new ballpark?
I think it's both. The ballpark helps. His power splits at the Trop this year were not very good. And he's really kind of an all or nothing type of player. That's probably a bit of an exaggeration to say that, but I mean, he profiles that way. He strikes out a lot. He pulls a great deal. But the reason why I say it's both is that, I think that his style certainly lends itself better to Camden Yards than to Tropicana Field. But, breaking it down, he strikes out a lot, but he does some other things that make the high BABIP look maybe a little bit regression-proof. And that he does have the speed to get the infield hits. He's making a lot of hard contact. He seems to, not pop out very much. So, I think he's due for some regression, but I also think that the way that I thought of him as a member of the Rays, was somebody who had some decent power, but really not much else to recommend him. I think between the upgrade in the ballpark and some things that I did overlook in his batted ball profile, that I think that he may not be legit at the level he's played at since the trade, but I think he is legit as somebody that you should be starting in a 12-team mixed league, particularly a roto format.
Absolutely. Someone else who's breaking out, Al, and I've been waiting for this to come. I got so much crap in our work league. Right at the beginning of the season, somebody was a bonehead and dropped Byron Buxton. So I spent 80% of my fab to pick him up, mostly as a joke. But, I thought he was the real deal. Like, he was my guy that I was hyping up this preseason, and he's been horrible. And finally, he's starting to play well.
Yeah, well, really going back to early July, and he did miss some time around the All-Star break. But, he's doing now, something very similar to what he did at the end of last season. And I saw a lot of people really discount that because he did a lot of his damage against, frankly, pitchers who had either, been called up with the expanded rosters or were, sort of filling in like we're seeing now with rotations being decimated and not really getting a lot of production against, the most fearsome of major league pitchers. I think this, at this point of the season, it definitely looks a lot more legit, and probably could make some comparisons with him and Beckham too, in that Buxton strikes out a lot, but he has brought that down quite a bit during this hot streak. The strikeout rate's much more respectable over the last couple of months, but he too has some BABIP potential to defray that strikeout rate that's still higher than average.
Now, watching his at-bats from right now, this week compared to the beginning of the season, it's an entirely different player. He looks completely comfortable at the plate. You can see his raw skills. I mean, earlier in the season, I wondered, I don't know if this guy's going to play in the major leagues after this year. He just looks so bad.
Yeah, and that may not be the last of those times when he struggles. It's probably not going to be a linear path, but this is now the second time that we've seen over an extended period where he's, like you said, he's showing the full skill set.
Before we move on over to the waiver wire segment, for the listeners of the Fantasy Bros Baseball Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you an opportunity to check out their service. I used my free book at first to listen to The Hobbit by Tolkien. I'm now on to my third book, which is Dan Bongino, Life Inside the Bubble. I love listening to these books while I'm doing the dishes. You can download The Hobbit or one of hundreds of thousands of other books for free. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/fantasypros. Again, that's audibletrial.com/fantasypros for your free audiobook. All right, Al, on over to the waiver wire. Nick Delmonico for the Chicago White Sox. I was looking at him batting cleanup the other day for the White Sox, and I just kind of laughed. Like, this is a triple-A team they're throwing out there. But boy, he has been hot lately.
Yeah, and the thing is that Delmonico really got no attention at all, or very little attention, as the White Sox were starting to clean house. And it seemed like there would be a place for him. And I didn't see a whole lot out there. And he just hasn't been touted as a prospect. But I think there's a little something there. I mean, I I did my own show earlier today and talked about him. I said, there's, I think, a little bit of Chris Shelton here that he's just happening to start off his career, you know, front loading a lot of the production. But, you know, I also think it's kind of curious that he had very moderate power at AAA Charlotte, and that home park in Charlotte is one of the best in the minors in terms of power hitting, and he didn't really take advantage of it. But his ground ball rate was up above 50% at AAA, and he's hitting more fly balls now, and he's still in a good park. So I think probably somewhere in the middle there between what you saw in Charlotte this year and what you're seeing in his first, I think it's 19 games that he's hit six home runs. You know, somewhere in the middle there is where I think he'll settle in. And that's somebody who's probably not going to have a whole lot of value in a 12-team mixed league, but anything much deeper than that, he should be owned.
I'm not touching him. You know, I would touch him in a, I would touch him in a deeper league, maybe in AL leagues. But, you know, I did say the same thing about Gary Sanchez this time last year. So take it with a grain of salt. And I said it in the preseason. I mean, these guys happen where they just develop power when they get to the big leagues. They've got a big league coach messing with their swing. Yep. And something just clicks. Maybe they talk to a veteran and they're seeing the ball better. They're thinking about things in a different light. So, you know, you can take a chance on this guy. My team's... I don't really need someone like Delmonico, but, you know, if you're in a pinch, I guess he's maybe the best guy to pick up at this stage. I would say it's Max Kepler for the Twins. He gets hot sometimes. He's hot right now. He's got tools. He'll steal you some bags. He'll hit you some homers. And this Twins lineup is pretty underrated. Max Kepler is still available in 80% of leagues. So he's my guy this week if you need a hitter.
I tell you what, go further, because the Twins actually wrote about this for FanRag yesterday. Both he and Rosario could finish really strong. And, of course, Rosario already having
been
a terrific second half. And the Twins schedule, both of them hit extremely well at Target Field. And most of their road series are in parks that favor lefties, lefty hitters.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I actually think Kepler's a great pickup just for the long haul.
Now, another lefty that's been pretty hot lately is Curtis Granderson, who was just kind of a bum sitting there in Citi Field. He's having an all right season, but now that he's with the Dodgers, he's scoring a lot of runs, he's getting on base, he's hitting for power again. It's like now that he's playing important baseball, he seems to be trying a little more. And, you know, I don't want to throw those narratives out there, but if that is a thing, I think it's happening with Curtis Granderson. So I'm all over picking him up. He's available out there in a lot of leagues, and I think he's going to help people a lot down the stretch.
See, well, I tell myself a different story about Granderson. That's you know, that's definitely tainted by you know, probably my fantasy playing history. That I just think he's just plain streaky, and he was getting hot before the trade. And I looked up the numbers earlier today, so hopefully my memory is holding true on this. But I think coming into today, he had 14 hits this month, and 8 of them were homers, and 2 were doubles, which is kind of a crazy ratio. So. You know, he's still not doing a whole lot in terms of, you know, compared to normal in terms of making contact or getting hits on balls in play. So I think what you got here is a nice power binge from Granderson. And for him, sometimes these do last several weeks. So to me, it's just more a case of playing somebody who's in a groove.
Before we move on to pitchers, I want to ask you about some of these rookies that were just called up. Rhys Hoskins, obviously he's available in a ton of leagues. He just swatted his 6th homer tonight right before we were recording this. The guy's just amazing. He reminds me a lot of I saw Fangraphs was riding Matt Carpenter. I think that's a really good comparison, maybe more pop. Ahmed Rosario hit a homer tonight as well. Dominic Smith has some pop. And Ozzie Albies, who I don't really think is ready, but he's playing all right baseball right now. Al, what do you think about these four guys moving forward for the rest of the season?
Yeah, well, Hoskins, I mean, so really, really great stats and peripherals coming out of AAA. And I think he put up better numbers at AAA than he did at AA Reading. And that's another case sort of like I talked about before.
That is like the biggest home run hitter's park. Yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah. So the fact that he, you know, translated very well, I think, and then some moving on to Lehigh Valley. And then, of course, now, you know, Citizens Bank Park, that bodes really well, looking, you know, looking good. I think maybe the first 3 games he didn't get a hit. And then since then, he's been great. So to me, Hoskins is somebody who should be picked up just about everywhere. There's got to be somewhere you can use them, even if it's just, you know, utility slot.
Yeah, I think he should have been picked up even before he made the majors.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I think if I'm remembering correctly, in the Tout Wars league that I'm in, the 15-team mixed, I think he was picked up several weeks ago because there were some rumors that he was going to be called up, And that's a league where you actually have to play the person the week you pick them up. So they, whoever it was, I don't remember which owner, but they got a big old zero that week. But if I think I bid on him as well, you know, so that's how much appeal that there is there.
Wow.
That you know, it's worth that risk to get Hoskins. And of course, now you don't have to take that risk. Albiz, you mentioned, I absolutely agree with you that it doesn't seem like he's ready. Maybe he can chip in with a few steals, but I have not pursued him. He'd be fine in the deeper leagues, but a lot of those leagues, he was snapped up as a speculative waiver claim, long ago. So I've not gone after him in the standard and shallower formats. And Dominic Smith, kind of the same thing. That maybe he turns out to be sort of like Josh Bell in that he didn't have great power numbers in the minors, but had great plate discipline, and he's kind of flipped that a little bit this year. So you never know, like you said before, you never know exactly how these players are going to respond once they get the promotion and they're working with the coaches and such. But first you kind of have to show me. So I'm not really interested in Dominic Smith in a 12 or 14 team mixed league.
I'm with you.
Rosario, I would be. I mean, he hasn't really produced as much as I would have expected up to this point, but I do think there's enough of a power-speed combination there to make him worth a try in a standard mixed roto league.
Now, over the pitchers, we've got a couple closer situations to talk about. It's pretty clear for the White Sox, Juan Minaya has taken over the closer job. He has 3 saves in the past 2 weeks. And then Familia is coming back for the Mets soon. Do you think he's going to be given the closer job immediately?
I don't think so, but I've been wrong about this before. I thought the Marlins were going to ease Brad Ziegler in, and they didn't. I thought that the Giants would go to Melanson right away. They didn't. So I'm now... a little gun shy about making these kinds of pronouncements. It's hard to tell ahead of time unless there's a pronouncement. So, but just to me, common sense says that with the length of layoff, that AJ Ramos will hang on to that job a little longer.
And Ramos is pretty good too. It's not like he's some bum that they're trying to hurry and get out of there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that factors in as well.
So I'm definitely picking up Minaya. It's just free saves. Whenever you can get saves on the waiver wire, you go for it. For the starting pitchers, we've got Lucas Giolito, who was just called off. He looked okay. I mean, this is a guy with great stuff. I don't know if he's hurt, but his great stuff went away. He's still got plenty of upside, but I'm not sure he's going to realize it. I might add him as a speculative play just in case he does get hot, but I'm not putting him out there in my lineup. I'm just keeping him on the bench to see what he does.
Yeah, that seems fair. I mean, he hasn't really established that much consistency in the minors, so he's kind of coming up on the upswing. But major league hitters are a whole different thing. So I agree. I think caution is merited.
And what about Miguel Gonzalez? He was one of the worst pitchers in baseball for a couple months. All of a sudden, people can't score runs about him. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if he's turning it on like Matt Shoemaker did last year. But something is going on with Miguel Gonzalez, and a lot of people are adding him.
I don't know if there's anything going on with Miguel Gonzalez. I'm color me skeptical because but the Shoemaker comparison, if you're going to make one, I mean that's a good one. I like Shoemaker better as a strike thrower, but both have those fly ball tendencies, and Shoemaker's got a better park to hide them in too. But Gonzalez has had some good stretches before too, with the Orioles a few years back. I think maybe even at some point with the White Sox, excuse me. But I'm not seeing where the underlying improvement is here. He's stranded a lot of runners in the last 3 starts, and then before that one, he had a start where he didn't make it out of the second inning. So there's, he's had a few good starts in a row, and he's had some moments in the last couple of months, but he's not really a big strikeout pitcher. He still has the really strong fly ball tendencies. The control is, I'd say, inconsistent at best. So I think it's just one of those stretches where if you buy into him, a couple of weeks from now, you're going to be kind of scratching your head saying, what happened there?
Maybe even the next start. In fact, probably the next start. I'm not touching him. I brought him up because so many people are picking him up, and I just wanted to blast him. Like, don't pick up Miguel Gonzalez. He's going to give up 5 homers his next start. It's just what he does. I mean, with Schumacher, at least he learned a new pitch.
Yeah.
He was, getting a bunch of people out, and everyone was like, what is this thing he's throwing out there? It's not on the film at all that I've been watching. Miguel Gonzalez, I mean, He has command lately. He's keeping the ball down. He hasn't given up homers. I don't think it's probably going to last. But then again, like you said, he's had some stretches. So Al, we're going to move on to trivia now. And this is a segment that we've been doing more and more as the year goes on. And, you know, there's not as much news and waiver wire options. It's just kind of fun. So we're going to do two active day questions and then two historical questions. The first one for you.
All right.
Four middle infielders already have at least 10 homers in the second half. One of these players is Brian Dozier. Which of these players doesn't belong on the list? Is it Rougned Odor, Jonathan Scope, Paul DeJong, or Javi Baez?
To me, it seems like it should definitely be Baez, but I'm afraid that it's too maybe too obvious. And plus, I don't think Scope's hit a whole lot lately. I'm going to go with my first guess and say Scope.
That is a great guess. I can't believe you got that because I was kind of trying to trick you there. I mean, Baez and DeJong, I know everyone realizes DeJong's doing pretty well,
yeah.
But this guy has been on fire. And Javi Baez, I mean, I brought this question up because I want to draw attention to how great Baez has been lately in the second half. He's finally putting it together. I know he has a 50% swinging strike rate at outside the zone pitches, which is just disgusting, but he's got a lot of power. And if he gets any plate discipline whatsoever, I think he can be a superstar.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, that's what, the word's been pretty much from the get-go. And he's made little bits of improvement here and there in terms of the plate discipline. But, you know, sort of like with Eddie Rosario, who we talked about earlier, you know, even though he's made vast improvement, you still look at the strikeout to walk ratio and it still leaves something to be desired. So Baez has his work cut out for him. But the potential is very much there.
So, Al, that was a really hard question. I always make this really hard. So nobody has ever got 4 out of 4. I think someone got 3 out of 4 once. But if you can get 4 out of 4, like, that's the world record. So there's a lot of pressure here. All right, question number two. Joey Votto's swinging rate at pitches outside the zone is under 10%. The next best in baseball is all the way up at 17.6. Who is it? Is it Mike Trout, Matt Carpenter, DJ LeMahieu, or Tommy Pham?
Oh.
I'm sorry, I need to clarify. This is in the second half.
In the second half, okay. All right, so LeMahieu, Pham, Trout, or Carpenter. I'm going to say LeMahieu.
Wow, 2 for 2. This is awesome. all of these guys were in the top 10, and I was really surprised by Tommy Pham because, you know, usually guys who are up here don't have big exit velocities, and Tommy Pham is historic. I mean, every single season he's played, he's had big exit velocities. I think the breakout for Tommy Pham is legitimate, but yeah, it is DJ LeMahieu. He barely beat out Carpenter and Trout.
Yeah, actually, I had ruled Carpenter out because I thought maybe he had been a little less selective of late. But Pham surprised me too, so I'm underrating the Cardinals.
Okay, question number three, and the pressure is building here. This is when it gets really tricky with the historical questions. These are the ones I like the most when Dan Harris comes on the show, he trivias me. That's not really a word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I love it when he asks me the historical ones. Okay, here's number three. In this millennium, so since 2000, who leads baseball in walks? Is it Barry Bonds, David Ortiz, Albert Bell, not Albert Bell, I'm sorry, Albert Pujols, or Adam Dunn?
Wow. I'll say Adam Dunn.
Wow, 3 for 3. Yeah, it is. It is Adam Dunn. And the amazing thing is he actually leads all of the major leagues in strikeouts by over 500 in that same span. So he's got like 2,300 strikeouts and the next worst has like 1,750, which is just, it's incredible. The amazing thing here, Bonds is extremely close, even though he played less than half the games Adam Dunn did in that time.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I gave Bonds a thought there, but I just thought, no, Dunn's probably played a lot more and certainly walked a lot.
Yeah, they were all pretty close. So this is remarkable, Al. You've got 3 out of 3, and we're moving on to question number 4 to set history and win the trivia belt. Before Nolan Ryan took over the record, which pitcher was the MLB single-season leader in strikeouts per 9 innings? Was it Dwight Gooden, Sam McDowell, Sandy Koufax, or J.R. Richard?
I'll say J.R. Richard.
J.R. Richard is close, but it was Dwight Gooden as a teenager.
Oh, that's
11.4 Ks per 9 as a 19-year-old.
Oh, I missed it. That was a tough one.
I feel bad for setting up.
Hey, everything from here on out was gravy because I'm usually not great at these trivia questions, so.
Yeah, still the 3 out of 4, that ties the record, and that's extremely impressive. I just can't get over that season that Dwight Gooden put together as a 19-year-old. I don't know what happened to him, but I can't even imagine when he was coming up and everyone was seeing how good he was as a 19-year-old, how much everyone was dreaming. I mean, we saw Jose Fernandez, who was the same type of talent. I mean, he was putting himself in the top 10s historically, and everyone was so psyched about him. What was it like when Dwight Gooden was just taking the MLB by storm?
Oh, it was a phenomenon. You know, we've seen a few pitchers like that, like you mentioned, Jose Fernandez.
Fernando Mania.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe once a decade or so, we see something like that. And yeah. Gooden, yeah, maybe the most phenomenal of all.
Yeah, Mark Fidrich. I think Dontrelle Willis is in the conversation just because he was so funky. He was like that guy that when he came to town, you made sure to get tickets so you could go see him pitch. Because he was just the next great thing. Well, it was a lot of fun.
He packed the old Dolphin Stadium. Well, it's still there, but the Marlins aren't in that stadium. Yeah. He packed that big park. You know, when he would pitch every.
That's
every
really
game.
Tough to do.
And that's a statement. Yeah, and he was so much fun.
Yeah, my dad and I went down there to scout for tickets, and it was like you could basically sit wherever we wanted in the stadium. And I was really shocked. That was the first time I've been to that stadium. We've been trying to make it to every single one, and I couldn't believe it. The Marlins had cheerleaders. Like, they were trying so hard to get people in the seats that they had cheerleaders there.
They tried a lot of things, and not the only thing that really worked was winning. And I wasn't around. I was in South Florida for almost 20 years, but I wasn't around for 97, but I was around for 2003. And late August, maybe September, and like I said, every fifth day when Dontrelle pitched, they packed the place. But it took Dontrelle and it took them, you know, getting in the playoff hunt to make that happen.
Yeah. All right. Moving on over to our final segment, listener mailbag. And if you want to submit questions, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com. It's the same email address for fantasy football questions. If you're listening, we're doing 3 fantasy football shows per week and having a lot of fun with that. So you can find it, Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Al, the first question comes to us from Michigan. Tony says, Alex Bregman has power, speed, and is batting well over 300 since the All-Star break. Is he a top 50 fantasy player next season?
I think so.
Me too.
Yeah, maybe not by much, but this is kind of what we were all, you know, kind of looking for. And, he's in the second half, he's cut the strikeouts way back. He's cut the fly balls way back. And that was something I had a little bit of a concern about with him coming into this year was, okay, he's probably going to generate a whole bunch of power, but is he really going to hit for average? And it looks like he is having a breakout. And going into next year, unless, you know, the last 5 weeks he falls apart, he's going into next season with a lot of momentum.
Yeah, him and Ben Intendi both, everyone was expecting these guys to take big leaps, and a lot of people were disappointed, but they really have taken big leaps. I hope you were one of the guys that bought low on Bregman. It's worked out really well for me, and I'm keeping him in that league. I'm really excited about it. I think he's going to be one of these guys that's drafted in the first round eventually, maybe 2 years from now.
That sounds about right to me, yeah.
All right, Shane from New Mexico. Are Patrick Corbin and Zach Godley legitimate number 2 and number 3 pitchers behind Zach Greinke that can lead the Diamondbacks to a World Series run?
I think they could. I don't envy any team that's got to go through the Dodgers, but they certainly have the pitching, and
these two have been really good lately, and they've got Walker too.
That's right. That's right. But I think that's right to view Godley as the clear number 2 in that rotation, and I would put Corbin ahead of Taijuan Walker probably as the number 3 guy. And actually, it's funny because when I read this, I was thinking of it more from a fantasy perspective that I view Godley as a legitimate number 2 pitcher for a good fantasy rotation. Corbin probably more of a number 4, but he's on a nice run now, and one that I think hasn't gotten him quite enough attention.
Yeah, it looks sustainable too. If you watch him pitch, he is he's just dominating hitters. He looks like he's the better man out there pitching from the mound. And you know, when Tony La Russa went to the Arizona Diamondbacks, there was a lot of hype about that. You know, he's not managing, and he was one of the better tactical managers. But the big bonus for him, for the Diamondbacks moving there, is that they got Dave Duncan. I know he's not the pitching coach, but he's still a pitching consultant for the Arizona Diamondbacks. And you know that these random guys like Zach Godley are just going to break out because they've got Dave Duncan there working with them.
Can't hurt. Absolutely can't hurt. And I don't argue with the results. I mean, he's got the complete package of keeping the ball down and getting swings and misses. You know, he could be an ace.
Now, Shane, since you're from New Mexico, I'm assuming you're a Diamondbacks fan. I don't know if you saw this episode, a month or two ago, but I actually said I think the Diamondbacks are going to win the National League. The Dodgers are a better team, but when you look at the Diamondbacks lineup, it is built to just mash left-handed pitchers. That's what the Dodgers have. They added Yu Darvish, but they've got Rich Hill. They've got Alex Wood. They've got Clayton Kershaw. And I think the Diamondbacks, on paper, it's just a good matchup for them. So I think they have what it takes. They're going to need to make the playoffs first, though. They're really fading quick.
Yeah, I think they'll make it. And then, you know, the Dodgers, they've got some health issues in that rotation. So
you're right.
It's sort of like the Cubs last year. You figure they're the team that are going to get to the World Series, but they had some tough hurdles to get through first, and I think the Dodgers will too.
All right, Al, two more questions here. This one's from Colin in Massachusetts. Jed Jerko, Jose Ramirez, and Corey Dickerson have all fallen off steeply in the last month. Are any of these guys droppable? I can't have them killing my team anymore.
I definitely can't go there with Jose Ramirez. I don't really have an explanation for exactly what's happened with him lately. But
he's still a top 50 guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say in the case with him and with Corey Dickerson, and with Dickerson, I think it's a little more of a longer duration with him. But, these are both players that have shown a high level of skill over long periods. Dickerson,
right.
I don't worry about Coors impact or Coors effect with him at this point. He's just a good hitter. And, and plus he gets to visit some good hitters parks as well. So even though he's been in a funk for quite a while, I just wouldn't put it past him to finish strong. And Jose Ramirez, if you own him in fantasy, it's annoying, but good players,
yes.
Good players go through, multi-week slumps. And I honestly believe that's all it is for Ramirez. I don't have any reason to think he's not going to rebound from this. So, Dickerson maybe in a three outfielder league, I could maybe see it, but absolutely not with Jose Ramirez. Now, Jed Jerko, I had some doubts about him in the first half anyway, so maybe it's confirmation bias for me, but I'm okay dropping him, for the right opportunity.
He was really solid in the second half as well. But yeah, if you're going to drop anyone, it's Jerko. He's now batting seventh for the St. Louis Cardinals. They've got all these random guys batting ahead of him who started the year in AAA and weren't prospects on anyone's radar. So the Cardinals don't think too much about him, which makes me, they're getting paid millions of dollars to make those decisions. So I would trust their judgment. Corey Dickerson and Jerko both homered tonight for what it's worth. So I don't know. Maybe it's worth holding on to them. Okay, final question. Reggie from Colorado. If you were an MLB GM, would you rather build around Gary Sanchez or Aaron Judge?
Yeah, this is such a good question. I
love this question, Reggie.
I thought about it a lot, and I kind of feel like the answer that sounds smart is to say Sanchez, partly because of position scarcity, but I also think, I wonder how long he stays behind the plate.
That's a good call, yeah.
And it's not anything particular to him. It's just kind of how that goes a lot for good hitting catchers. So, just the toll that position takes on a player. And on the other hand, I look at Aaron Judge, and I do think that there's more power there. I mean, we've seen both of them just have crazy extended power binges, and but also see them go through droughts. So I don't think it's just a matter of recency, recency bias with Aaron Judge, that he's been the one who's had the more recent, just unbelievable power binge. But I just do think that there's more power there. I think he's a better OBP candidate, and I think he can get those strikeouts down. He didn't have good strikeout rates in the minors, but they were closer to respectable. And so I could see him as a player maturing over the next year or two, getting that strikeout rate down maybe into like the mid-20s. He's not an albatross for batting average or in a points league. He's not going to hurt you that much with strikeouts. He's going to walk a ton. He's going to have, 40, 50 homers. He's going to, 300 plus ISO. So even considering position, I just think Judge to me. Sanchez, I don't see as being an elite among all hitters. I see him as being an elite among catchers. I think Aaron Judge could be one of the top, five or six hitters for years to come.
Yeah, Judge is having an incredible season. This is actually a really cool comparison because we have 145 career games out of Sanchez, 146 out of Aaron Judge. So we've got a really, easy way to compare them right here. And I'm looking at it. Gary Sanchez has 43 career homers. Aaron Judge has 41. Aaron Judge has 17 doubles. Gary Sanchez has 27. So his ISO is quite a bit higher than Aaron Judge, believe it or not. Now, Aaron Judge has walked an extra 40 times, so he scored more runs. But Gary Sanchez has driven a lot more runs. He's hitting for a higher batting average. He plays the harder position. And I know Judge has broken out more this year, but remember, Gary Sanchez was coming back from an injury. And, you know, Gary Sanchez is younger, too. So the answer to me is Gary Sanchez. Man, I can't believe the Yankees have two incredible players here. They've got Gleyber Torres coming up. They have all kinds of guys here. And the Red Sox are really good, too. These two teams are going to sit at the top of the American League East for a long time, Al.
Yeah, it's an enviable position for both teams. And you know, that certainly makes a stronger case for Gary Sanchez. I think for me, it's... I kind of claimed it wasn't recency bias. I think if I'm honest, it's a little bit of that because I am a little distrustful of the front loading of that power for Gary Sanchez, that maybe some adjustments were made. Yeah. Yeah. There's the injury to consider as well, but, I don't know. It's a tough call.
Yeah. Also, by the way, an extra 60 strikeouts in there for Aaron Judge. They're just both incredible players, and it's amazing the Yankees get to build around both of them. Al, this was a lot of fun. Really appreciate you coming to the show again.
Fun for me, too. So, yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Bobby. I really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. Take care. And for those of you listening at home, we've got another show coming up next week with Fantasy Pros correspondent Chris Bragg. We've also got three Fantasy Pros football podcasts going on every week and all kinds of contests going on, listener league, signed jersey giveaways. So make sure to check that out on iTunes, subscribe and review. It really helps us. Thanks for listening and enjoy your baseball.